Hi FM, your station of choice since 2008.
Yesterday, of course, a very, very conflicted day because we saw the hostages being returned home. We saw them in the arms of their mothers. But at the same time, we worry desperately about 90 arrested terrorists, many of whom have blood on their hands, being returned into the either East Jerusalem or the West Bank. Well, many people have said if there was the death penalty, this wouldn't happen. But obviously, this is not as simple as all that. We can't assume that this comes without its own problems. Well, how do we treat it? U.S. Attorney at Law, John Day, there's many things we want to talk to him about today, but we do want to chat about this as well. John, a very, very good morning to you. Thank you for joining us. How are you?
Of course. I'm well. Good morning, Harry.
It's a very, very complicated issue around the death penalty. Before we begin, what is the status in the United States?
Well, we have in the federal system, there exists a death penalty that's rarely used, but it's a state by state jurisdictional situation. Each state gets to make its own decision. It depends on what part of the country you're in. In the southern states, in the western states, it's often legal. In the sort of more liberal northeastern and coastal states, it's been outlawed. So it really depends on where in the U.S. you are.
Interesting that this type of decision is different state to state. One would think that the death penalty is something that would cut across the whole country.
Yeah, well, it used to be, I think, much more prevalent. And but in the last, say, 30, 40 years, the states have individually made their decisions. And again, it depends. If you're in the more conservative southern U.S. and western states, it's something that still exists and is still used pretty frequently. But doesn't exist in states like New York, California, Massachusetts, the sort of the New England states. But again, it's just come down to what each state wants to do. Our federal system still has it. I think although Joe Biden pardoned a bunch of or commuted the sentences of some people who were facing the death penalty recently, and that caused a bit of a stir.
Let's talk about terrorists, because this is a very, very contentious issue in Israel now, where children are seeing killers of their father, for example, just walking free. When the man is killed in a civilian environment, he's, you know, shopping or whatever he's doing, and now that murderer is going free in a hostage exchange deal. How do we process this?
It's a situation that is so problematic. I mean, I've been following. I know exactly what you were talking about because I was following the release and the exchange. And you know, the closest thing I can think of, and it was relatively recently in time, but it involved our federal death penalty. There was a domestic terrorist here named Timothy McVeigh who blew up a federal building in Oklahoma City in the 90s, and his trial was of course followed intently. He was given the federal death penalty and executed, and you know, he had been responsible for the murder of dozens and dozens of children, of adults, in this federal building, and the response was generally, I mean, there was an anti-death penalty element to it, but I think this was something where people saw a murderer of children, and it certainly lessened the opposition that could have been there. And so I can only imagine what's going through the minds of the families to watch these, you know, cold-blooded killers walking free. Doesn't seem like justice. It doesn't seem
no, it
like
certainly doesn't.
It serves the
Do we know if the death penalty is a deterrent. And obviously, it sounds ridiculous. It's obviously a deterrent for the person who's dead. They're never doing it again. But does it act as a deterrent for other potential killers?
Well, you know, it depends on which study you look at. And I, as a former prosecutor, I handled cases that were eligible for the death penalty. It never actually was imposed because the laws changed. But at the time, I felt like, you know, there are some crimes that it's, I mean, there's certainly some evil. I mean, you can't deny that some people are just simply evil and that these crimes occur. But does that actually deter the person? And I think, you know, again, in our system here, it's a state-by-state choice. I think states like Texas, which often uses or often sentences people to death and carry those sentences, I think the officials there, people there, lawyers there could argue, prosecutors there would certainly argue that it is a deterrent. And without it, you would have the worst that would happen is someone would get life in prison without the possibility of parole. And the other side, people argue, well, that's a worse sentence than death, sitting there for the rest of your life. But I think at the end of the day, the idea is that there has to be some kind of deterrent for the purely evil things that happen. Otherwise, what's the what's the worst case scenario for someone who's making a choice, if they're making that choice?
And when you add politics, religion, and terror into the whole mix, surely leaving a person alive and able to influence others to do the same, who we know will, if ever freed, will do the same. You know, these 90 terrorists who have been released yesterday, as somebody said on the show on Friday, are not going to open stores. They're not going into commerce. They're going back with as heroes to perpetuate more killing and more death. So what's really been achieved?
Right. And again, that's the difference between, say, a murder that occurs, say, here in the States and the commission of some other, you know, a bank robbery, a robbery, a domestic violence situation. When it's a politically motivated, when it's an ideologically driven situation, that takes it into a totally different realm. And if you are releasing people who have the ability to generate additional activity, it's a very different situation than a random tragic killing in a convenience store or something. So it's an entirely different argument when you're looking at someone whose ideology has driven them to take that step of murdering, and then they're back in the bloodstream. They're back they have the ability to continue to push that ideology. So it's a very different situation than the ordinary, you know, death penalty case here in the States.
Yeah, it really is very, very different. I'd love your thoughts on 0618951019. John, the other subject, of course, that I wanted to talk to you about is, well, it's not a big day for you yet. It will be a big day for you tomorrow. It is already Monday for us. The new president, Donald Trump, becomes the next president of the United States. What's the mood like?
This is fascinating, Howard. I mean, even people who don't like Donald Trump feel, apparently, if you look at, you know, the polling and the national discussion, they feel like this is a change, that something new is kicking in. It's very different than his first.
It is so different. I'm so glad you said that, because the perception that I have is exactly that. And I'm interested that you're feeling it there.
Absolutely. The first inauguration, I think, you know, this was a fluke. Nobody knew what they were doing. He had people who had never been in power before. It was a bit of a clown car show initially. This is very, very different. You have people who are competent, seem to be incredibly competent. At least that's what they're portraying themselves as. They have an agenda. They have an ideology. Trump has announced, they've announced that the first day, I think there are a list of 200 executive orders.
Amazing.
That he's going to issue. And it's a completely different mindset from the first inauguration. And even people who don't like him feel like there's a change, obviously a change. The winds are changing and things are going to happen. And Trump and his people have promised, a few of them have called it shock and awe, but probably that's the best description of what they intend to do right away. So it's very, very different. And especially when you contrast it to the relatively pathetic, sad Joe Biden speech that he gave, that where he made these warnings about things. And it's like, well, you were president for 4 years and now you're getting around to warning us about these things. What was taking place? So a lot of contrast there with this brand new
did you hear
Trump 2.0.
When he spoke about the hostages yesterday, he didn't sound well. He was slurring his words, completely inarticulate. It was quite, and I kept thinking, can you imagine if this guy had another term?
That's what a lot of the discussion has been about around that. He's made public comments about, well, he should have, he thought he could have run. He thought he could have, could have won.
Yeah, he certainly can't run anyway.
No one who has seen him thinks
that. Mm.
It would have worked. And it's a bit sad. And especially with these speech where he's giving these warnings about things, it just seems some, when you contrast it with the energy and the optimism that the Trump people are portraying, it's a huge difference.
And there was even the shift where we see Barack Obama chatting to Trump. Something has changed in the politically elite's view of or treatment of Donald Trump. He seems to be being taken a lot more seriously.
Oh, absolutely. And I remember a couple of years ago, he was written off he was done. I mean, that was sort of the sense. And I think what happened is people realized that the Republicans and the Trumpists and the MAGA people were actually right about the mood of the country, and that the Democrats had completely missed the boat on what was taking place and what people wanted and what was important to people. And it really highlighted the failure of the Democratic Party, and also highlighted how Trump is so skillful at tapping into the mainstream feeling of American voters, people who feel like finally someone is paying attention to their needs and what they're hoping for and their aspirations. And this Trump 2.0 is it's a brand new situation that people are feeling positive about. And like I said, even people who don't like him are grudgingly saying, this is something new. He's bringing in energy that we've never seen before, even though he's older than he was last time, obviously. But you contrast that to Biden, and Trump doesn't seem old compared to Biden at all.
Not at all. That's where we leave it. John Day, thank you as always. Great chatting to you. And of course, we will catch up with you another time. It is 7 o'clock. I'm Howard Feldman. Good morning.